United Auto Workers are on their fifth day on strike against the big three U.S. automakers Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis, which includes Chrysler and other brands. So far, it's been a partial strike limited to manufacturing plants in Missouri, Michigan, and Ohio, representing roughly 13,000 of the 146,000 workers in the full union. Union President Sean Fain said this week that if the two sides don't make significant progress by Friday, the strike will expand to include more workers at more plants around the country. The UAW is seeking wage increases and expanded benefits that automakers say are beyond what's sustainable for their businesses. It's a historic strike against the three automakers. We're learning more now about the labor market and the economic forces involved, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see come out of this strike? Do you know someone in the UAW? Are you involved in this or in the auto industry? Join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Michael Childers is professor in the Department of Labor Education at UW-Madison. He's an expert on labor unions, collective bargaining, production standards, and labor management relations in union environments. Michael, welcome back to Central Time.
Always a pleasure, Rob.
Michael, set the stage for us a little here. How do we get to this point where the UAW is doing this sort of rolling strike?
It's been unique in this respect. Their tactics have completely deviated from previous playbooks. And I think it really does have the auto manufacturers on edge in that, they've basically broken all of the traditional rules in terms of how they've negotiated contracts in the past.
What specifically is the UAW seeking for workers?
Again, I think your intro covered it fairly well, and it's similar to a lot of the other labor negotiations that have occurred this summer. I'm thinking of specifically the UPS and Teamsters negotiation. But basically what workers are looking for are substantial increases to their wages. They'd like to get back to where they had been, basically, in terms of purchasing power. It's not even necessarily that they're the raises that they're looking for, I guess I'll put it in a different context, would get them back to parity with the wages that folks were earning prior to some concessionary contracts that have been negotiated. Another major bargaining point is the use of the disparate pay for the same work, what sometimes are called tiers. And that, again, was a major issue in the IBT-UPS negotiation. And maybe you've seen pictures of the UAW president, but that's what he's talking about when you see his T-shirt that says end tiers. So
let's give a listen to UAW President Sean Fain talking about the impact of a widespread auto worker strike on automakers and the economy.
In the last 4 years, the price of cars went up 30%. CEO pay went up 40%. No one said a word. No one had any complaints about that. But now, God forbid, that workers actually ask for their fair share of equity in the fruits of the labor and the product they produce. And all of a sudden, it's the end of the world. So, the talking heads, the pundits, the companies want to say that, you know, if we strike, it can wreck the economy. It's not that we're going to wreck the economy. We're going to wreck their economy, the economy that only works for the billionaire class. It doesn't work for the working class.
I want to get into that last point. Michael, Sean Fain, UAW president there, he has widened this in some ways beyond this is about automakers and the UAW to wider critiques of the U.S. economy. What do you think of that part of their unusual playbook?
I think it's just to bring more awareness that, again, and we've lost most of our auto manufacturing here in our state. Mm-hmm. But it's the idea being that, you know, what workers are asking for, and I think the point he's trying to make is it's not unreasonable and it's actually very much in line with what is happening generally in the economy. It's that, hey, if the price of a gallon of milk and a gallon of gas goes up, we should be able to cover those expenses with our wages. We're here, we're generating the value, the profit that this company enjoys, and we'd like to share equitably in those profits.
Automakers have argued they couldn't sustain compensation at those rates. Here's Ford CEO Jim Farley also talking to CNN here about his worries.
Sean's requests are very clear. He proposed a nearly $300,000 fully fringed wage for each of our factory workers to work 4 days a week. And if we had done that in our business, when we've had a couple of really great years here, we would have gone bankrupt many years ago. $15 billion of losses, we'd have to close plants, most people would lose their jobs, we'd have no money to invest.
And this is what companies often say when faced with a strike and demands for higher wages, but is there something to that? Are the big three automakers sustainable with this higher level of compensation that UAW workers are asking for?
They absolutely are. And I think, again, part of collective bargaining in the United States that it seems opaque to people who've never had to participate in it is that both sides have to go in with offers that are far from where they would be willing to settle. But that's the nature of the way it's conducted here in the United States. So, for example, the Ford person was actually citing as if they were going to agree to the opening proposal that the UAW made, which, of course, UAW is not necessarily expected. I mean, they would be happy to accept that, but they're not expecting that that's where things would settle. And I think corporate profits speak for themselves, right? Thanks to the Securities and Exchange Commission, we actually have access to corporate finances, and the finances bear out. This was the case with the Teamsters and the UPS strike as well, or the UPS potential strike as well, that the profits are there. What the workers are asking for are not unreasonable. Absolutely, does it reduce profits? Sure. Are the companies not going to make as much money as they would have liked? Of course. But again, it's not that it's unaffordable. It's that how much would you like to afford? So.
Talking to Michael Childers, professor in the Department of Labor Education at UW-Madison, looking at the UAW strike, a partial strike so far. We'll see what happens on Friday if a deal isn't met. Love to hear your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Your questions about what's at stake, how these kind of negotiations might work, and if you are personally affected, definitely love to hear from you. Join in at 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Michael, you've watched over the years a lot of strikes and a narrowly averted strikes like the UPS one you mentioned. What are you watching for to see how the two sides negotiate and if they're going to arrive at a middle ground that they agree on?
Well, like you said, I started with that this was sort of unprecedented in terms of the way that the UAW has bargained with the big three always in the past. I think you've already pointed out, the other shoe is in the air with respect to, the union has already telegraphed that they would like to move towards concluding an agreement by noon Friday. Otherwise, there will be an escalation. They've basically said that. What I've also been watching is, in the past, the Canadian auto workers also bargained as a part of the United Auto Workers. Now it's a separate union called Unifor, and they've conducted their negotiations sort of in the old school tradition, in that they're only bargaining with Ford right now, and had actually threatened a strike against Ford at midnight yesterday, or this morning rather, and at the 11, literally between 11 and midnight yesterday, got a substantial offer, is the way it's been reported in the media so far, and so far have suspended that strike for another 24 hours. So this time tomorrow, the Ford workers in Canada may also be on the picket line.
One critique of strike efforts like this is that, okay, maybe UAW workers win, but that ups the incentive for automakers to open plants in other countries or maybe in states with more lax labor laws. Could unions be shooting themselves in the foot here?
I think in a real sense, that cow has left the barn, in the sense that if you look at where all domestic manufacturing has been located site-wise for the last literally 40 years, it has been the case, right? That it's been primarily in the Southeast or in the global South, whether it's Mexico or the offshoring of jobs even further. So in a real sense, I don't know that that's necessarily a threat. And I think that's another point that we had not really brought up, which is another one of the major demands is the UAW is looking for assurances that, with the new technology coming online and the new vehicles being primarily electric, that foregoes the need for an engine and a transmission in these vehicles, which means Those are plants that employ many workers, and the UAW would like to see those workers be allowed to transition to things like battery factories, which are going to be coming online, obviously, to support the new EV.
So we're going to call her at 800-642-1234. Raleigh is with us in Oak Creek. Raleigh, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious about the states that have right-to-work laws. How does that affect the workers, the company, the negotiations? How does that all work out? Can these workers go to work during a strike?
Raleigh, thanks a lot for the call. Michael, many states, including Wisconsin, now have these what are called right-to-work laws, limiting the power of unions in a lot of ways. Does that affect this ongoing strike and these negotiations?
No, thanks for the call. It's a really good question because I think it's confusing to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. What right to work does is actually, it was implemented as a part of the Taft-Hartley Act post-World War II after the large strike wave here in the United States. And a lot of people called it the clipping of labor's wings in a sense, because what it did was workers who are in a unionized environment are still represented by their union. As a matter of fact, their union has a duty, a legal duty, to represent them fully. They're still subject to the terms of the contract. I think your question is more, can people cross picket lines? Yes, obviously there's a word for that. In the labor lingo, they would call those folks scabs. And in a sense, what they're saying is, those are our jobs and you're actually going in and doing my work while I'm in a dispute with my employer. Right to work doesn't really play into that directly, for example. I guess the thing about right to work is the way it weakens unions is even though unions are obligated by law to represent, negotiate contracts, defend these workers, the workers have the option to not pay their union dues. So hopefully that clarifies that for you, Raleigh. But yes, workers can obviously can cross a picket line. Most don't, because really the most important word in the vocabulary of especially unionized workers is solidarity.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to UW-Madison Labor Education Professor Michael Childers about the UAW strike going on now against the big three automakers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a member of union or maybe even the UAW? What do you think of this strike and how they're handling it? And in general, do you have questions? Do you have thoughts on how you want to see this all come out? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Michael Childers, labor education professor at UW-Madison. He's with us today looking at labor negotiations between the UAW and the big three automakers that led to the current strike. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the auto workers' strike? What questions do you have about the negotiations between the UAW and automakers? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Andrew is with us in Milwaukee. Andrew, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to ask about, Andrew?
So I wanted to bring up, when I was in Argentina, I studied abroad there from UW-Madison, and there was a big strike going on. The public teachers were renegotiating their contracts, and the bus drivers, the subway drivers, it seemed like there was a lot of strikes in solidarity and mass mobilization of workers. And I remember hearing that that was illegal or something like that in the United States, kind of those cross-the-board strikes.
Andrew, thanks a lot for the call. Michael, I seem to remember historically there being solidarity strikes from unions not directly involved in a negotiation. Is that something that does happen? As Andrew asks, is that something that can happen?
I think it, in the sense that if it can happen or not, workers can do what they want to do. Sometimes even regardless of what their union leaders are telling them they should do. But I think it's a great question in the sense that the reason, yes, that's absolutely a part of labor history here in the United States. General strikes is what they were mostly called. And you saw these happen like citywide, like San Francisco will go on strike. Minneapolis will go on strike. when they passed our U.S. labor law, which was back during the Depression in the 1930s, part of what this it was the Wagner Act at that point. It's now called the National Labor Relations Act. And what it tries to do is to get the parties to work out their differences without having to resort to work stoppages, to strikes. And the reason why in the United States, well, two reasons why you don't see more of these widespread strikes or sympathy strikes is, number one, most unions and their employers, when they negotiate a mutual agreeable contract, will put in no strike, no lockout clauses, which basically means that for the duration of this agreement, we agree that we will not go on strike. So that's one sort of detriment to, as far as like that there would be a sympathy strike or other workers joining workers that are on strike against their employer. The other thing would be partly the changes in the law we mentioned, what the Taft-Hartley Act did with respect to the creation of the so-called right to work, where union members could actually opt out of paying their dues. Another change was it made secondary strikes, in other words, the strike against not the direct employer, against the law, and actually the unions could be liable for damages for going out on strike against someone that is not the primary target. So both of those contribute to the reasons why you don't see that very often here in the United States.
Andrew, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. William joins us now in Lake Geneva. William, hi.
Hi. My daughter is an engineering manager for General Motors, and her husband happens to also work for General Motors in the UAW. And it's interesting because last year, they each made over $100,000. The difference being that my daughter, with a master's in engineering and material science, divided up, she works on average 65 to 70 hours a week, and divided up her salary, and she makes less than her husband with just a high school degree did in the UAW hourly. And it kills me because I hear on the news that the average UAW worker makes close to $50 an hour, has 5 weeks paid vacation, has 17 paid national holidays. I'm 60 years old. I don't have those benefits, not even close.
William, thanks for the call. Michael Williams saying UAW workers already have it pretty good.
They absolutely do. And that's the fruits of many, many negotiations with their employer and the sacrifices that generations of auto workers made prior to even these current negotiations. I guess the difference between the two scenarios that were discussed is, I'm assuming that the gentleman's daughter does not have a union. And in the United States, if you want to be able to sit down as an equal with your employer and bargain around hours, wages, and your conditions of work, the way you get those rights are by joining with your coworkers and forming a union. And interestingly, there are professional unions. For example, I think he said she's an engineer. Mm-hmm. The Boeing engineers that work for Boeing Corporation that build the airplanes have formed and do negotiate with Boeing as a collective bargaining agent. They're unionized.
William, thanks a lot for calling in. Michael, what are you watching for next now in this UAW partial strike to see if we're going to get some progress here?
Well, like everyone, I've been following it with a lot of interest and pretty closely before they actually took the three individual plants, one from each of the automakers out. I was curious exactly what direction they were going to go and how. So I'll be very interested to see what happens if there isn't significant progress by Friday in terms of how they choose to escalate, if it'll be more assembly plants, because another option that they could have taken that I think some people had expected was they could, and this comes from actually the history of the auto workers, if you take out a key component in the supply chain, for example, brakes, right? You can't ship any products if you don't have the parts available to have brakes on the vehicle. So by just striking the one plant, the ripple effect over some amount of time would impact all of the assembly plants, for example. So, I mean, I'm watching that in terms of how they choose to escalate on Friday. if they need to. And I'm also watching what's going to happen in Canada, because again, while they don't have near the footprint that the UAW does in North America, if they do strike Ford, that's going to have a pretty dramatic and pretty quick impact on Ford's operations.
And Michael, moving beyond the auto industry now, in addition to the UAW, you've mentioned the UPS narrowly averted strike. We had the rail workers. We've got the ongoing strikes for actors and writers in the TV and movie industries. It seems like there's a lot going on in the union world these days. Are we at some kind of turning point in American labor history?
I mean, you got to let the historians write that, right? I think it's interesting because, you know, the Gallup poll, as far as public opinion around unions, has never been this high in my lifetime. And I mean, I think the part we just left out were the things like the Starbucks baristas. And there has been sort of this, I mean, I think coming out of COVID, maybe a renaissance in terms of workers expecting more from their work life. And again, as I just mentioned earlier, the way in the United States you get the right to have a voice at work as an equal with your employer is by joining with your coworkers and forming a union.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure. Take care of.
That's Michael Childers, professor in the Department of Labor Education at UW-Madison. He was with us today to talk about the historic UAW strike against Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis, now on its fifth day, possibly expanding on Friday if a deal isn't reached. Well, we don't have those plants closing here in Wisconsin, but do you have a connection with somebody who is in the middle of this story, who is on strike or looking at it happening over the next week or so? Love to hear from you at ideas@wpr.org. Again, you can email ideas@wpr.org if you've got a personal connection to this story.